On Lineage and the Uses and Limitations of Scaffolding. Isaac Newton once said, "If I have been able to see further, it was only because I stood on the shoulders of giants." We all implicitly know that there is a huge advantage to using what has come before, building on the creative genius and hard work of others who strained the limits of effort and dedication to see deeply into the nature of things, whether these forerunner explorers were scientists, poets, artists, philosophers, craftsmen, or yogis. Meditative practices did not arrive in our present era out of a vacuum. Those who came before us, the direct and multiply branching lineages of teachers reaching back to the time of the Buddha and well before the Buddha, provide a roadmap, an offering, available to us to explore and to take the measure of. These maps can amplify and enrich our possibilities for the inner exploration of the human mind and its potential that we have already embarked upon. Almost all scientists themselves have mentors, or people who inspired them at one point or another to look and question deeply in perhaps a different and novel way. Even James Clerk Maxwell, who derived what are now known as Maxwell's equations of electromagnetism, one of the most colossal achievements in physics in the 19th century, anchored his efforts upon the work of Michael Faraday, who preceded him and shared many of his instincts, if not his mathematical virtuosity. To arrive at his breathtaking insight, describing precisely with four pristine equations the propagation of electromagnetic fields through space, Maxwell employed a mechanical analogy, a mental model of turning gears, to explain to himself how these mysterious, never-before-visualized, incorporeal forces of electricity and magnetism might actually be related to each other. The model was entirely wrong, but it served him as a kind of scaffolding, allowing him to climb to where he was finally able to see, to reach a point where true insight into the nature of the forces he was attempting to understand was possible. The four equations he arrived at by climbing the thought scaffold he erected were entirely correct and complete. And so it is with meditation. We too can make good use of various kinds of scaffolding, much that we create for ourselves, much that we adopt from those who came before us, both to motivate us and assist us in coming to know and understand the terrain of our own minds and bodies and their intimately embedded relationship to the domain we call the world. Yet at a certain point, we will have to transcend the scaffolding, the platforms we have erected to help us to see, if we are to go beyond our own cognized and inherited models to the direct experiencing of what is being pointed to with instructions, words, and concepts. Just sitting down for a time to, quote, meditate every once in a while, or even regularly for years, is not likely by itself to nurture insight, transformation, or liberation, even though that very impulse to meditate is priceless and the faith in oneself critical for undertaking that adventure. As a rule, we need to contextualize our efforts, yet without getting caught in the narratives that having such a framework and context usually entails. Such meditative narratives would include the notion of a fixed destination. With meditation, it is the journey itself that is most important. The destination, in a very real way, is always here, just as what is discoverable in science is always here, even before it's seen, known, described, tested, confirmed, understood. Yet without real work, whatever might be here to be revealed in the domains of our own minds and hearts, even though it's already here, remains opaque and of no use to us. It's only here in its potentiality. For it to be revealed requires us to participate in a process of possible revelation and to be willing to be shaped and transmuted in turn by the process itself. For this reason, it definitely helps to have a map of the terrain we will be entering when we begin meditating. You are likely to find it helpful to know something of the road you are treading and its vagaries, as reported by those who have traveled it in the past and mapped it out to whatever level of resolution they have managed in their own brief encounters with the infinite. Meditation practice invariably requires a certain kind of scaffolding, especially at the beginning, in the form of meditation instructions and a variety of methods and techniques. Such scaffolding also includes the larger context in which one would undertake such a strange lifelong adventure as to hone your own capacity for dwelling in stillness, for looking deeply into the nature of your own mind, and for realizing in this very moment and in all the moments that present themselves the liberative dimensionality of awareness. Just as we need scaffolding to build a building, just as scaffolding was needed for Michelangelo and his apprentices to paint the frescoes on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, so we need a certain kind of framework to bring us to the essence of this inner work, right at the edge of this in-breath, this out-breath, this body, this moment. But just as when the building is built or the ceiling completed, the scaffolding is no longer needed and comes down, never having been part of the essence of the endeavor, simply a necessary and useful means for furthering it, so with meditation, the very scaffolding of instructions and framework is dismantled, dismantles itself, really, and only the impalpable, wordless essence remains, that essence being wakefulness itself. With the Sistine Chapel, the scaffolding may need to be kept in storage or resurrected for touching up, for restoration, for repair or fine-tuning over the years. But in the case of meditation, the masterpiece is always in progress and at the same time always complete in each moment, like life itself.